What's up, Bitcoiners? This fantastic rip with Tomer Strohlite is brought to you by Ledin.io, a better home for your Bitcoin. Ledin is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. With industry-best interest rates on savings, use your Bitcoin as collateral for loans, or double your Bitcoin stack with their Buy2X program. And Ledin raises the bar for transparency in the industry with proof of reserves attestation. Not yet a Ledin client? Start earning 9% on your USDC and 6.1% on your first two Bitcoin. Listeners of the Bitcoin Matrix podcast get an exclusive offer of $50 free in USDC when you become a Ledin user and take out a Ledin loan using our link. Learn more, sign up, and get earning at start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix. In this episode with Tomer, he returns to talk about two more of his fantastic pieces. We cover Bitcoin is for everyone and the Bitcoin rule. It was so much fun recording the last rip with Tomer that we couldn't wait to run it back. Tomer comes across as wise, insightful, and calming as usual. I hope you guys enjoy this one as much as I did.
What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Bitcoin is for everyone. Who is Bitcoin for? Bitcoin is for you. Let's start with the most important person in the world, you. Wonderful, special you. Yes, you. Whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever you've done or whatever you haven't, none of that matters. You can use Bitcoin if you want. You are welcome. Bitcoin welcomes you to use it. Just wait until you see all the things you can use it for. But Bitcoin isn't only for you. Bitcoin treats everyone the same. So it's also for anyone else, whoever they are, whatever they've done, whatever they haven't. It doesn't matter. They can use Bitcoin if they want. Bitcoin is for everyone. Each and every one, every single person. There are absolutely no restrictions on who can use it. Bitcoin doesn't require government identification or that you open an account. You don't need permission from your parents or a university degree. Bitcoin doesn't need to see a note from your doctor or your credit score or proof of where you were born or an invitation code. Nobody needs a license to use it, or anyone to vouch for them, or anyone else's permission at all. This is partly why Bitcoin is so important. Bitcoin is for everyone. Even it's for the people who don't have government ID, or parents, or a university degree, or a doctor, or good credit, or proof of where they were born, or anybody else in this world to vouch for them. So Bitcoin is for people who have wealth, and it's also for the poor. It's for the people who live in the richest countries on earth, and it's also for the people who live in the poorest ones. It's even for people living where there isn't any functioning country at all. Bitcoin is for people with lots of friends, but it's also for the lonely. It's for those with formal education and those who have to live by their wits alone. It's for those with nice homes and cars, and those with no shoes on their feet. Bitcoin is for everyone. Bitcoin can be used anywhere. There's no place Bitcoin can't be used. Bitcoin itself is not in any one place. It is anywhere its users are. It has no location, no center, no headquarters. Bitcoin can be used by a street food vendor, whether they're in Manhattan or El Salvador. It's for the roadside fruit stand in the Caribbean, in Lebanon, and in Nigeria. It's for the refugees, dissidents, and reluctant emigrants from places like Venezuela, Syria, Argentina, or Hong Kong, people who must leave behind everything else they have to find a new place to live. Bitcoin is for the people who depend on relatives working abroad to send wages back home in countries such as the Philippines, India, China, Egypt, and Mexico. There are so many people all over the world without access to reliable money, without access to a financial system. Bitcoin can be used by every one of them, wherever they are. So Bitcoin can be received by any wheat farmer anywhere in the world, from any nearby miller who will grind that wheat into flour and sell it to a local baker who will make it into bread, to sell it to a neighboring family who can then be nourished to do what it is that they do, which may be something the wheat farmer may buy from them using the Bitcoin he received for his wheat. Anywhere, everywhere, by anyone, over and over again. Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, whatever the profession, whatever the activity. Bitcoin can be used for almost anything. Almost. What Bitcoin can't be used for is what makes Bitcoin for everyone. Yes, Bitcoin can be used for everything involved in making bread or shoes or factories or hydroelectric generators. You may then ask, can't Bitcoin also be used for something bad? Well, Bitcoin can be used for alcohol where that is illegal, and cannabis where that is illegal, and guns where those are illegal, and fireworks, books, Bibles, and more where they are illegal. But so can any money. Bitcoin has only been around since the year 2009, and people bought and sold illegal things before we even began counting those years. But remember, Bitcoin treats everyone the same. Bitcoin gives no one any special treatment. This is what makes Bitcoin different from other money. What makes Bitcoin special is that Bitcoin can't be used to help some people get away with something at the expense of others. The very first Bitcoin transaction ever, in the very first block of Bitcoin ever, which will forever remain a part of Bitcoin, has an embedded message inside of it that says, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks. What is the significance of this? What is a bailout? In the case of banks, a bailout is when, despite the fact that a bank has failed, that it has gone bankrupt, that it has lost money, that this has happened because it made negligent and irresponsible decisions, despite all this, the bank receives a grant of free money to prevent it facing the consequences of its mistakes. And its executives, officers, and shareholders do not pay a price for their mistakes. That's the bailout. Now, if this were to happen once and only once, a bank might learn its lesson. You're getting a second chance. Don't be careless or negligent ever again. But when this happens a second time, there is a very different lesson. That lesson is, be as careless as you'd like, because you won't ever have to pay for your mistakes. But you can get to keep the rewards of your risky bets if they do pay off. Who does pay for these mistakes? It isn't nobody. It's everyone else. Everyone. The farmer, the foreign worker, the factory worker, and the teacher. It's even the six-year-old who will enter the workforce only 20 years later with a debt burden to pay off because the banks got bailed out when she was only a child. When people who take careless risks don't have to pay for them, they stop taking care to not take careless risks. In fact, they are rewarded for taking careless risks. This, sadly, is the world we are living in today. A world where banks lend recklessly, governments spend irresponsibly, and debt mounts exponentially. A world where those who rack up the debt, not in the millions of dollars, not in the billions of dollars, but in the trillions of dollars, do not pay it back. They have no intention of paying it back. They make others pay it back, either directly or through inflation. In some places, this amounts to gradually increasing prices for food, clothing, and more. In many places, it means that the later you are born, the less likely you are to be able to afford a house, or the greater financial burden it will be to pay for an education or to afford quality health care. In other places, it means a wheelbarrow full of money cannot buy a loaf of bread. This is the effect of bailouts and policies like them. Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, but it can't be used for bailouts or for the many schemes like bailouts that go by many other names. And this is what makes Bitcoin truly for everyone. Bitcoin's money cannot be created by government decree. It cannot be printed by central banks. It cannot bail out the failed, reckless banks. It cannot be used to finance the debt of the recklessly spending governments. The supply of bitcoins cannot be inflated. The rate of issuance cannot be accelerated. No government can enforce a law saying they shall have millions of bitcoins or that the banks shall have them. And so, thanks to Bitcoin, the family who hold it for the sake of using it to buy bread is protected from the decisions made in some faraway capital city to bail out banks. National currencies are currencies made by those with the power to print money for the people who print the money at the expense of those who work for the money. But Bitcoin is money made by unstoppable and unchangeable algorithms to serve everyone equally at nobody else's expense. That is why Bitcoin is for everyone. So while Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, it is what Bitcoin can't be used for that makes it so special. It can't be used to force some people to pay for the mistakes of others. It can't be used to create a privileged class of financiers, bankers, and politicians who need not earn their money and who do not face the same consequences as others if they lose it. Bitcoin isn't just for the privileged. Bitcoin is for everyone. Finally, Bitcoin is for any time. Bitcoin lasts forever. Bitcoin doesn't tarnish. It doesn't rust. It doesn't dissolve. It doesn't decay. It doesn't dilute, evaporate, or inflate. It doesn't depend on the existence of any government. It doesn't need to be redeemed for anything else to prove its worth. Its value is that it is for everyone and that it always will be. Bitcoin is forever. You can save your Bitcoin for tomorrow, next week, next year, or until the end of your life, and you can pass it on to whoever you want to when your time comes. We said that Bitcoin is for everyone, and we really mean it. Bitcoin isn't just for you and for everyone else alive on Earth right now. Bitcoin is also for everyone who has not yet been born. Bitcoin is for everyone to come. Whatever the politics of the Earth are generations from today, Bitcoin will still be there for whoever wants it. Nations will come and nations will go. Bitcoin does not rely on the continuation of any nation. But math and physics do not change. They stay the same forever. And these, math and physics, are all Bitcoin needs to be around forever. Let us recap then. Bitcoin is for everyone, because Bitcoin is for anyone. Bitcoin is for everyone because Bitcoin can't be used to advantage some at the expense of others. And Bitcoin is forever one because Bitcoin is forever. Bitcoin is for everyone.
Wow, that was beautiful. Thank you so much, Tomer. With me returning tonight is Tomer Strohlite, slayer of lies, lover of truths, who just read that piece, Bitcoin is for Everyone. Tomer is a longtime Bitcoiner who has recently started writing prolifically about the insights he has gained over the years. He's also the host of For the Love of Bitcoin podcast and a popular writer within the space. Bitcoin, the only way to learn is to begin by admitting to yourself, I don't know. This is also the only way to be free. This is what Tomer believes and he strives for and believes in sovereignty, truth, and integrity. Tomer Strohlite, welcome back to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back. It's nice to see you again.
We
got along really nicely the first time we spoke. And so it's just a kind of a friendly re-encounter, even though we're recording it for other people. I'm just happy to see you.
Likewise. I really appreciate that. And I'm definitely excited to see you. It's always great to connect. And, you know, we were talking about before the show, but I didn't really get to ask you, what was your inspiration for this piece?
This was the first piece that somebody else actually asked me to write. And it was Brady Swanson, Citizen Bitcoin at Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin was doing a campaign, which I believe is still running, called Bitcoin is for Everyone. And the idea was to get a Bitcoiner or to get some Bitcoiners from every country in the world to share the fact that they use Bitcoin. So to make some kind of tweet saying, you know, here's my story, here's my picture of where I am, this is the country I'm in, and the hashtag Bitcoin is for Everyone. And so they were doing a big launch for it, and they said, will you write one of your pieces for Bitcoin is for Everyone, called Bitcoin is for Everyone? And I said, sounds too easy. And and Brady said, well, make it poetic. So I actually wrote like a rhyming poem that was kind of short. And he said, well, that's not really what I meant. So then I said, okay, I'll, he said, make it like your piece. Don't tell me there are no heroes in Bitcoin. And that's another kind of emotional piece. It's similar to this one. It gets very strong. And so I sat down to write it, and I thought it was going to be easy, but it turned out to be hard, not in that I didn't know what to write. Like what was writing flowed easily, but I didn't realize how serious it was going to be. Because when you just say Bitcoin is for everyone, it's like, oh, you know, we're going to say it's for boys and girls and tall people and short people. And, you just run the whole gamut of inclusivity and you think, okay, I've said that Bitcoin is for everyone, but that's not how serious it is. It is, of course, the most inclusive institution that's ever existed because it's for everyone in the world, regardless of race, creed, color, gender, sexual preference, anything like that. But it's for people who need sound money. And so it got really, when I got to the parts where it was really serious and I realized it's not just it's for people based off of these political labels that we put on them. It's for orphans, right? It's for people who have no family. It's for people who have no state. It's for people who have no rights. It's for people who have very little. And it's and then as we go on, it's for people who are being essentially abused or robbed or stolen from, and it's protection for them. So it's not just anything for them, right? It's not like Evian water is for everyone. Well, you know, it's not for everyone, I suppose, but it's only for rich people. But it's also, so there's a big so what about it, right? There's a big, like, a so what is in who cares. But who cares about Bitcoin is like the people who use it, they care deeply about it. And more people are going to be able to care deeply about it. And it struck me very, like I had to stop my writing at least two times, like literally stop and walk away for half a day because I was so emotionally overwhelmed by the realization of how serious Bitcoin really is for so many people. And, you know, for me, it's very serious, but it's serious as a mission to deliver rights to people. My rights are not as badly violated. I'm a victim of inflation and all kinds of other, and taxation and all kinds of other things. But I've got a good relative to people who don't live in the modern West. And Bitcoin's for me. I get all these great benefits for it, but it's also for them. And then just also this realization that it's forever. And that, you know, right now we rob from the unborn. Right? Like the debt spending of our civilization is stealing from children who are born and stealing from babies who have not yet even been born or conceived. It is revolting, right? It is shameful and disgraceful behavior that our politicians would borrow money and saddle an unborn child with the debt to pay it back so that they could win an election. Shame on them. And Bitcoin is for those unborn people yet. It's going to treat them fairly, right? They're not going to be born owing 80,000 bitcoins because some prime minister or president had a $3 trillion bitcoin spending spree to win an election. It's actually really serious, right? Like if we're going to sustain the planet because we're not going to have all these ridiculous inflationary expenditures to stimulate things so that a politician could get elected, or so that people, special interests, can fight over making their lives easy without earning the money, right? Essentially having it handed to them freely. So it's, damn it, it's really fucking serious. And that's why it's for everyone, right? Literally everyone who is now, if they want, and everyone who will come if they want. It's been engineered that way. Like, how brilliant is that? So much, you know, I talk in another piece that I wrote about how the programmers in the 20th century didn't even think ahead to the fact that the year 2100 would come around, or 2000 would come around, sorry. And so we had this big Y2K crisis because nobody planned ahead for that. And here Satoshi planned ahead for eternity. Right? The blockchain can never run out of space. It's this infinite architecture. And the address space for addresses has enough for like trillions of addresses for the next 10 trillion people who will be born. So like we're not running out, and and it wouldn't take much to create a new address type if we needed more than 100 trillion addresses. So it's like it's really built forever. It's built to last forever, whether we produce lots of energy or little energy. It'll adjust, it'll adapt. It's this amazing technology. So yeah, so Bitcoin is forever for everyone, forever
for anyone. I agree. And you know, looking at this piece right from the top, you know, and actually just commenting on what you said in terms of, you know, the seriousness of the world, how things are really fucking serious. It's revolting, the incentives of the system and how things are playing out. Yeah, we mentioned Bitcoin's for everyone, but it's, you know, for the unborn. So that they're not, you know, born into debt and for orphans. Right. And, yeah, you know, but at the top of the piece, we ask who is Bitcoin for? And Bitcoin is for you. Let's start with the most important person in the world. You, wonderful, special you. Yes, you. What do you say to people who say, well, you know, Bitcoin's not for me. Maybe it's for the unborn. It's for the orphans. I'm not so special. Maybe I don't need this. I'm getting by.
Well, anyone who tells me they're not special, I would say you are. You are a once in the history of the universe event. There's not ever going to be anyone else like you ever again. And you need to recognize that, and you need to love yourself. You need to recognize how special and unique you are and what you bring to the world and what you can bring to the universe and experience in the universe and be a joyful being. So I really do think every human being has all this wonderful potential in them, is worthy of being loved, has everything that they need inside of them to have some measure of success and happiness in their life. And the more that you understand your nature, the more you can accept yourself and love yourself and realize that you are special. And so I really do like to make sure that people know that about themselves, because it is true, and you deserve Bitcoin, right? Like, so if someone says I'm not special, that's almost like saying I'm not deserving, I'm not worthy, and you are worthy of love, and you are worthy of enjoying the benefits that Bitcoin brings to you at the other end of the spectrum. So you are worthy. If for anyone who's listening and thinks maybe they're not special, they are.
When do you think you realize that maybe about yourself? And I ask the question with the subtlety of, like, you know, there's, I think there's a difference between like thinking that your desires are important and need to be fulfilled and the world owes you, and thinking that you're an important person in the world and have a lot to offer and you should make the best of yourself to put that forward.
Right. Like, I'm 51 years old, so I've been on a roller coaster ride with respect to that. You know, like when you're born or when you're a young kid, you think life is this wonderful, magical miracle. And you're right. I just want to say, and then you begin to unlearn that, and you get put into a school. You learn the exact same thing as everyone else your age who learned the exact same thing that everyone else their age learned the year before. And so the school treats everyone like they're all exactly the same, not like everyone's special and unique and magical. And if you really are into the learning, you feel like it's special for you because it's like, oh, wow, you know, this school exists and it teaches me everything that I wanted to learn. And it's so interesting and it's so special. But we know that there's a lot of people who don't end up feeling that way about school as well. And we all go through it. And really, we're not, whatever words are said, the system does not symbolize that you're special. Nobody pays special attention to you in that regard. So I think, you know, and then you graduate into a workforce it no, maybe no longer true right now, but it used to be, there were jobs and job titles and companies, and many people held the exact same job with the exact same job title. So that doesn't tell you that you're special and unique and different. It tells you you're a teller, right? And this is your job description. And we wrote it at the head office in the capital, you know, wherever the head office is, in New York City or Toronto or Luxembourg or Zurich. And this is what you do. This is your life. It's been identified. You have no say in it. It's been identified for you. So we start to lose sight of that as we go through careers. And some of us end up with careers that are very malleable and dynamic and exciting. And so we end up feeling special throughout our careers. And then some bad things happen. I'm actually giving a bit of a life story here, right? and then some things happen where the career goes off the rails and you feel like maybe you're not so special and you're not so worthy, or you're no longer keeping up with the times, or somehow the world has changed and you haven't changed with it, or somehow you changed and the world hasn't kept up with you. And, you know, and so you stop feeling special, and you need something to get you back. And there's a crisis in this world right now, right? There's a mental health crisis and a depression crisis. And a meaning crisis, and people are struggling with that, right? They don't know what their purpose is. They don't know what the meaning of society is. There is a lot of confusion, and our civilization and culture is not strong right now. And so people are really struggling with it. I mean, interestingly enough for me, I had gone through this stage. I had a very successful career. I loved the people I work with. I loved what I was doing. And things happened that made me decide, actually turned it around, made me decide to quit the job that I loved that I was doing. And 8 years later, I had not yet found anything that I truly loved in its place to work as a career. And I was depressed, and I felt unworthy. I felt like I wasn't worthy of my own love and the love of my family. And I felt like they didn't love me anymore. And it wasn't until a friend of mine who had been studying the use of psychedelics in the treatment of depression, who was seeking help for his mother, who was suffering from depression, and became certified in it, said, "Tomer, maybe you should try this." And so I did a professionally supervised session where I took MDMA therapeutically in a special environment where I began by reading self-affirming statements and bringing together things that I loved and having a playlist and just going through it. And within an hour or so of the medicine kicking in, I realized exactly this. You know, my family does love me and I do love them and I am worthy of all this stuff, and I don't need all this negative self-talk, and I shouldn't resent the things that I have to do, but I can, the fact that I can do them and others can't, which is why I'm asked to do them, is what makes me special. And that doesn't make me better than other people. It makes me different than other people. I can do other things. So it was a very beautiful experience. And I did a second session a couple of months after that. And that, during that session is when I decided I wanted to write about Bitcoin, because Bitcoin was the thing that I loved so deeply for so many years. And I hadn't been able to find a job after having lost my job at the beginning of COVID. I said, you know what? What harm will come? I have all this energy inside of me. I have all this time. I think I can write. I'm going to start writing about Bitcoin. And it's been a terrific experience for me.
Yeah. It's interesting. I struggle with some of the same things around career and fiat mining. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we'll get into it in a second, but like, you know, credentialism and fiat credentialism is not something I've mm-hmm. struggled with, but in terms of, I want to talk about that. And in terms of the, you know, like the fiat mining or just corporate culture, and I think the incentives of the entire system creates a lot of soul sucking jobs for a lack of better way of putting it. Yeah. And even if you get to deploy certain skills within those functions, a lot of the output and results and measures are actually meaningless, in my opinion, where decisions mm-hmm. and things, actions are actually taken. And but to kind of change it up a little bit, the question, like, you know, like when COVID hit, you know, the question of there was essential first responders, and those were the who should get the supplies. And And I turned to my family immediately. I said, well, we're all essential here. So I'm not talking about any particular supplies, but I'm like, we're going to get what we need. And, you know, and do you think that, because we talked about how people are special, but are people essential? And what I'm really getting at here, are there things worth dying for?
Well, I'm a little confused by your question, because I want to say, I felt like you asked two questions at once that were very different. That's the confusion.
So sure.
Are some people essential and other people not essential?
Or no, are we all essential?
Well,
really, yeah, but I'm really, yeah.
Who's to tell you that you're not essential? Like to whom, right? The question is, who's the valuer in the discussion? And this is one of these terrible things that I really do hope, as Bitcoin matures, people will start to realize this, that they are sovereign of themselves, that they are not a part of the state. They are a human being. If a state exists, a state is a collection of human beings who are trying to live and have their rights protected and get a benefit from it. But it certainly cannot treat individuals as expendable. That is a crime right there. If it does that. And so, you know, it's very important to be appropriate on context. Right? It's like, I can't walk in and say, well, why are you giving the army the jet fighters? I want a jet fighter. They're no more essential than me. So it's like, you can really throw the context off. But to declare, when in this crisis, the government said the following people are essential, and the rest of the people, by, you know, process of elimination, are not essential. And a lot of small businesses got shut. And we saw what really happened, right? What really happened wasn't that this ended up serving to protect the safety of people. It ended up serving to help larger corporations that were deemed essential. This is especially true in all the retail environments, right? Amazon, of course, did amazing, but so did the large big box stores that were allowed to remain open. And it was small businesses that in many communities were forced to close and forced to rely on subsidies, but not really work and not be productive and not do the thing that they were special at, just sit on their asses and collect government checks. And it's not clear whether this saved a lot of lives or didn't save any lives at all. But just the fact that the government could think and that the population could accept that some people are essential and some people are not essential is problematic. Now, it's clear if there's a ton of people going into the hospital and we need healthcare workers, we want to take care of them, it's very important that we do that. Maybe we couldn't come up with a better word than essential, which is unfortunate, right? Like, you know, urgent, high focus, you know, priority right now would have all been better words than essential. You know, like these are the ones that matter and the other ones are expendable. I guess that's the opposite of essential. And so there's a problem with that. Now, you had a second half to your question. I've forgotten it now.
Is there anything worth dying for?
Oh, yeah, of course there is. Of course there's lots of things worth dying for. Your freedom is worth dying for. Your quality of life is worth dying for. Like, I'll give you the perfect example. Like, is it worth living in solitary confinement in a black hole in the ground where someone throws you a scrap of food just enough to live? Or would you fight that? And if it cost you your life, it's worth dying for, because the quality of your life, if you don't fight for it, is not worth living. So there's a spectrum, like that's an extreme example, right? Or like somebody, is it worth dying for? So you live a life where, and somebody comes in and beats you every day. Let's just make it really, like, it's worth dying to get out of that situation. You'd rather be dead than live that way. So absolutely there are things worth fighting for and dying for. And the question becomes, how far along the spectrum of freedom to live our lives are we prepared to go and fight for something and be prepared ultimately to die for it? If there's actually forces in the world that are attempting to restrict our freedoms to the point where our lives are not worth living or not as good as they can be, to the point where many of us would be prepared to fight to the death because we care about our children, right? And it's not just because we care about ourselves. Like, for me, a lot of what I do is because I love my family so much. And And I'll do anything for them. And so I would die for them. I'm happy that I get to live for them, but I would die for them. And you speak to most parents, and you know, you don't think about it until you become a parent. And then you have a kids and you say, oh, I would die for my kids. And it's a very difficult thing to explain to people who haven't had the experience of having kids, but it's very easy to relate to people who've had kids who overwhelmingly feel this way, especially when their kids are young, and there's this protection instinct or value that you get as a parent.
Yeah. You know, I think that there's a lot of warning signs out there though right now in terms of, it seems like bells are going off everywhere. Liberties are being taken away. I think about a quote like, give me liberty or give me death. Right. I look around me outside of sort of Bitcoin Twitter, and you know, the other day I saw a young couple walking home, maybe after high school, of a rebellious nature, you know, dyed hair and mohawks and tattoos and big earrings, and both masked up, walking hand in hand.
So they're LARPing. They're LARPing.
LARPing. But I mean, where are the rebels? You know, any sort of music I listened to as a kid, I mean, where are these people now who said such rebellious things that we... you know, sort of at whatever there, and you know, borders are closing.
Yeah,
I mean, really serious things are happening, and it's pretty quiet on some fronts.
No, today's a very somber day. Today, for me, there was a part where I almost, when I was listing the countries where people are reluctant immigrants, it wasn't in the original writing, but it is today. I was going to say my own country, Canada. There are people who are reluctantly immigrating from Canada because vaccine mandates are being put in place, which will forbid them from traveling outside of the country or even within the country on airplanes. And today, two of my dearest friends told me that they were leaving the country, and it hurts. And I'm very sad about it. And I'm angry about it too. But I'm more sad about it because I love my friends, and I'm going to miss them deeply, and I'll get a chance to visit them and whatnot, but it's not going to be the same. I see them once a week now, and I'll probably see them once or twice a year in the future. And this is a consequence of our rights being infringed upon by fear in the populace and broken incentives in the realm of politics, where in politics, dividing people, blaming people, you know, creating villains and pointing the finger at them. And so the people who don't want to get the vaccine have been labeled the unvaxxed, right? There's already a slur, and that slur is being used by the media, and that slur is being used by politicians, and it's being used by the population at large, and their rights are being taken away, and they're feeling scared and persecuted. And nobody gives a damn. I shouldn't say nobody gives a damn, but those people in power don't give a damn, and they don't. And they feel frightened of this group that they've now put on the other side. And parties, when people are frightened, it's their amygdalas, not their neocortexes, that hijack their brain, and they get into fight or flight mode. And that's, you know, and our civilization is divided in so many ways. This is the hot issue today, but it, you know, we're also divided on the environment and energy, and oh, there's just so many things. Happened to the murder? What happened to the easy days when we had murder hornets to worry about? Like, everyone was in agreement. We didn't want a murder hornet invasion. That's probably why the issue went away. We couldn't get people to fight over murder hornets, but you can get them to fight over carbon dioxide, and you can get them to fight over viruses, and you can get them to fight over a lot of things. And that's what sickens me about the politics, right? Because they fan the flames of making people fight. And the media, right? Who's going to watch who's going to watch news of people not fighting with each other? Let's get the good graphics of the anti-aircraft fire and the firebombings and the rioting in the streets and the police beatings and the people fighting back and burn, you know, and the arson. That makes for good ratings. So we just have all the wrong incentives in these institutions that we're supposed to rely on to keep the peace. And their incentive is to not keep the peace.
Yeah, I mean, so much there to unpack. And I think that, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is just around this sort of 45-day timeline with Canada. And I my calculation is it's like, because you mentioned that you maybe friends that leave, you'd get to see them maybe once or twice a year. And I don't know if I agree with that calculation. I kind of see this as like a one and done. And
I should be clear. I'm not going to be restricted from traveling myself. My daughter has an immunocompromised condition, and so we all ended up vaccinating ourselves to protect our daughter. Yeah. And so I'm not one of the unvaccinated. They have I'm the rare person who has a sympathy towards these people. Who mean no harm to anybody and want to do no harm to anybody. So I myself will be in that privileged class for the time being of being allowed to travel, but maybe exercising my freedom of speech lately will see certain other rights denied to me. But I want this thing to blow over, but it just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and I don't see it blowing over.
It's not a pleasant thing, yeah.
I do want to turn to, you know, back to the piece, and one section that really struck me was Bitcoin doesn't require government identification or that you open an account. You don't need permission from your parents or a university degree. Bitcoin doesn't need to see a note from your doctor or your credit score or proof of where you were born or an invitation code. Nobody needs a license to use it or anyone to vouch for them or anyone else's permissions at all. That is partly why Bitcoin is so important. Bitcoin is for everyone, even the people who don't have a government ID or parents or university degree or a doctor or good credit or proof of where they were born or anybody else in this world to vouch for them.
Yeah. Okay. So that, when I finished writing that, I had to take a break for like 6 hours. Mm. Like that, because that personally hit me, just realizing how privileged so many of us are, because we are the people on that list who do. We've got parents, we've got the university degree, we've got the government ID. If we need a note from our doctor, we can get one. When I wrote it, I wasn't even thinking about vaccine passports, but I guess that's what people think when they read a note from a doctor right now.
Interesting.
Right, or a certificate. Like Bitcoin doesn't require any of those things. It doesn't test for them. It doesn't know that they exist. You just need a random number, and anyone can generate one, even if they only own a single coin, even if it's a useless, worthless coin made out of plastic, which might someday be worth more than our actual government issued coinage.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you had a specific question about that, but like that's a really serious thing. When you say for everyone, right? Like again, here we talk about all citizens are treated equally, or there's universal rights, and now we're seeing that they are not universal. They are temporary. They are at the government's pleasure, and if the government decides not to, they will start to challenge those rights and take them away from all people. But they can't take away your right to use Bitcoin.
Yeah. What I was kind of really, what really piqued my interest there these days, especially around just this credentialism, but university, you know, just economically, I just don't see myself sponsoring my kids to go to college or university at sort of these sort of rates and what the experience would give them versus maybe even just buying them a Jamba Juice and letting them sort of work their way into equity, you know, right. and getting real life experience. And I'm kind of curious what you think about a lot of this credentialism, but like right now in you see a lot of experts say or fact checkers say, and that to me seems like peak credentialism, but I'm not sure.
And it's such a I shouldn't say that. It's an offensive word. It's such a ridiculous form of credential, expert. Nobody, can you imagine you actually went to university and someone gave you a degree and it said, expert, like you have a bachelor's degree in being an expert. So expert is a proxy for a specialist in some field, but of course the media just now uses it to sound like they've done their research and spoken to people who are qualified and skilled. You know, experts say usually I believe means we just fucking made it up. right? And you can bring on an expert, and you can often see, well, you know, this person, if they're really such an expert, why do they have to wear the costume? Like, why do they have to show up in full uniform with the white lab coat and the stethoscope on? They're like, you know, I'm here for the interview. I didn't feel the need to dress up as something for you, right? It's phony. It's, you know, it's this attempt to project expertise. How about we rely on your actual skill? How about we listen to what you have to say and you defend your conclusion rather than you claim that you're right because you're wearing a white lab coat or went to Harvard?
Right.
Or won a popularity contest and became elected.
So recently there's been a little bit of drama around content creation and sort of remuneration and what's the word I'm looking for? You know, subscription deals or whatever it is, a way to get education across to Bitcoiners.
Whether they should be charged or not. Someone who wanted to charge hundreds of dollars for
a course. And so I kind of wanted to ask your opinion on, you know, this aspect. And I don't want to get into sort of the weeds on that, but I want to just talk about, like, what is your take on, you know, the content creators out there and trying to contribute value, educate, evangelize, and whether they should be compensated or not, and maybe how they should be compensated, like what makes sense or is sort of...
I believe in free markets. Right. So I think people should be out there. Like, my own story is I started writing not because somebody offered me money to write. I started writing because I wanted to write. And I was hopeful that if I did a good enough job, it might turn into a job. Right. In some way, shape or form, that it would not be deemed as this hobby or this crazy guy writing about this crazy idea about magic internet money. And it did work out after time, but it wasn't instant. I had to practically write a whole book before I even got the first payment. And so first, I think there's so many people who love this space. You should be doing it only if you love it first. Okay, because if you don't love it, the quality of your content is going to be crappy compared to someone who does love it. Because the people who love it just go so deep and they care so much about it and they put so much energy into it. So if you're like, what I really like is fancy cars, but I think I'm going to get a fancy car by spending 8 hours a day, you know, creating content about Bitcoin, you're going to find yourself disappointed in the audience that you attract, because someone who is prepared to do it by and large for free or out of their passion is going to do a better job. As when it comes down to getting paid, that's a mutual. We're going to read another piece to talk about moral codes on the show, and I'm going to say if you subscribe to the Bitcoin rule, which we'll explain what that is when we get to the reading. It's mutually up to the content creator and the content consumer whether or not there's going to be compensation. And the content creator can say, I've written some content or made a video or prepared a course, and I'm making it available to people who pay X dollars or X satoshis if they're smart. And some people may say, that's ridiculous, I can learn this for free. And others may say, you know what, you're saving me the time, you're saving me the effort. You've got a good enough reputation, or the way that you're framing up the material is unique and interesting to me. And so I agree to pay that. And they can exchange messages between each other. That's how a free market works. And as long as the course creator or the content creator isn't being deceitful about what it is that they're providing for money. Like, I think if you're providing it for free, you're getting more than what you paid for, right? Because you paid nothing, but buyer beware. There's a lot, understand what's the motivation in this space, because there are people who are motivated to create content in this space because they love Bitcoin. There are people who are motivated to create content in this space because that content is really a hook for a scam that they're trying to get people to fall for. So but that's why I say buyer beware. You know, if I read that whole Bitcoin is for everyone piece and I ended it with, and that's why you should buy some, you know, X token that I've pre-mined, it would really make the piece suck. Because the sincerity of it would be gone. But I don't have any objection to people charging for things. I think if you're taking advantage of the naivete of newcomers by overpricing things and they're going to feel buyer's remorse, then the word will get out that you did this. And this was the controversy, right? It was like somebody wanted to charge a whole lot of money for a Bitcoin course for a particular demographic. And maybe it was even a good offer. It seemed like to me on the surface of it, I didn't inspect the course material. It seemed a little pricey. It didn't sit right with me, but I didn't judge it. So I didn't condemn it, and I don't condemn it here on this. I'm just saying, I'm not even in the target market, right? It was a course for a demographic that I don't fit, that I don't identify as. So it's not even for me. So it's for the people who are in the demographic to decide whether it's for them. And if people go on it and they come back and they say, oh my God, this was totally worth it. And it's not a pyramid scheme where they say, oh, if every two people you sign up, you get back your money. But it's actually like you learned enough about Bitcoin that was amazing. Then good for them. They did something good and they stood in the face of everybody, you know, everybody on the outside throwing stones and criticizing them for charging a lot of money. And if it turns out, you know what, it's nothing special. And the first cohort of people who went through it don't have anything special to say about it, it'll fizzle out. That's how the free market works. That's totally fine.
Yeah. I agree there. I do think we should let this free market decide. I'm glad you shared your opinion. I want to turn to the piece where you talk about how Bitcoin is for people with lots of friends, but it's also for the lonely. It's for those with formal education and those who have to live by their wits alone. It's for those with nice homes and cars and those with no shoes on their feet. Bitcoin is for everyone. Bitcoin can be used anywhere. There's no place Bitcoin can't be used. Bitcoin itself is not in any one place. It is anywhere its users are. It has no location, no center, no headquarters. How do you explain that to people? Or elaborate it. Some people say, how does it have no center? How does it have no headquarters?
Right. It depends on how curious and what level of detail people want. Like this is one whole tunnel within the rabbit hole. And you can just tell people it's decentralized. You can tell people what that means. It has no CEO. It has no head office. It's not incorporated in any country anywhere. It's not a legal organization. It's not blessed by the government. It doesn't have any money on its balance sheet. It doesn't have a balance sheet. It doesn't have any employees. It doesn't have a marketing budget. Are you starting to get what Bitcoin is? I have one article called Why Bitcoin is Not Like Anything You've Ever Seen Before. It's something very close to that. This is part of my Why Bitcoin series. And whenever I teach a course, that's where I start. I start with a blank slate and I say, Bitcoin is, clear your head. So some of you are here, you think you're going to be buying shares in Bitcoin, the company, right? And you think you're going to be owned and you think someone's going to control these and you think the government can stop it. And you think that you have some recourse if you lose your Bitcoin, that they'll replace your lost Bitcoin. There's nobody to do any of this stuff. There's none of this exists in this thing. It's not like anything you've ever seen before. That's the name of the article, Why Bitcoin is Not Like Anything You've Ever Seen Before. It's just not like anything you've ever seen before. And so I can go into that, and I've got all these words, and it's a very short article. So if people are listening, I really encourage you read it. It's a short article. And I would encourage, if you're trying to orange pill somebody, I would encourage you to say, like, before you say, oh, you're going to make so much money in it, or it's about freedom, it's clear their minds. Because they don't understand how owning shares in a company is about freedom, or owning tokens on something is about freedom. Let them know that nobody can stop this thing, that it has no employees, that it's incorruptible because there's no human beings in charge of it, so there's nobody to corrupt, that it's unhackable because it uses this type of math called cryptography that uses numbers that are random and larger than all the atoms in the universe. Like, now people start to say, okay, this is not like a company, and this is not like a government agency, and this is not like a not-for-profit. It doesn't have a president. It doesn't have any employees. And so people start to, that's how people start to see it. And then you can actually say, well, all the information is written on this document called the blockchain, which can only be added to, and there's millions of copies. There are tens of thousands of copies of it all over the world. And every Bitcoin is located on every copy of this blockchain that's everywhere in the world. So it's everywhere and nowhere. When I was first getting into Bitcoin, I ran a node. I still sometimes sync it, but it's not where I keep. I ran a node on this very laptop that I'm having this conversation with you. And I think the first time Bitcoin hit like a $10 billion market cap, I was joking with a friend who I was sitting at the terminal when they ask you, like, are you bringing any instruments greater than $10,000 into the country with you? I was going to say, I got $10 billion on my laptop because I got the Bitcoin blockchain here. But I didn't, because that would have, I would still be trying to explain to the customs officer what the hell I was talking about, that I was importing $10 billion worth of these things called Bitcoins. And I didn't really own or control any of them, but I thought it would be funny. So that, like, this is why it's not like anything you've ever seen. These are all these reasons why it's not like anything you've ever seen before. And it really is useful. I'm beating a dead horse here, but it's a really important horse. It's like, if you want people to start to understand Bitcoin, like if they believe you that there's only ever going to be 21 million of these things, people who deal with inflation get Bitcoin quickly, but that's not Westerners, because we have very modest inflation. It's people who live in countries where inflation's a real problem, and everybody knows it, because you'd have to be the biggest idiot in the world to not realize that the price of bread goes up 10% a month. But for people here, it's like, well, I trust the government, and I think the government's got a lot of power, and won't the government stop? Like, the biggest obstacle I run into over and over again is, won't the government stop it? And, they're still very smart, very experienced, older investors, famous ones, who think, oh, the government will stop it if it gets big. And I've written lots of articles about why the government can't stop Bitcoin. And I mean, we could do a 2-hour show on why the government can't stop Bitcoin, why they can't stop it. Like, it's not just the government; it's they. Aren't they going to stop Bitcoin? And no, they aren't.
Yeah,
but that takes time to explain, and that requires expertise. In understanding how everything about it works, how proof of work works, how decentralization works, its portability of it, all that kind of stuff, how it hides, the fact. Anyhow, I'm not going to get into it, because I'll be talking to you for hours.
I mean, I was just going through with a couple guys at the local neighborhood block party last night, a couple dads, and and they were getting it, and they were picking it up quick. And I think the key, though, and the reason I read part of the line before the Bitcoin can be used anywhere part, is that it is kind of really for those who live by their wits. And what I mean by that is, like, when I'm explaining Bitcoin to someone, like, the people who are turned on, keyed in, interested, and following along, pick it up. Because it's so hard to any one of the points. There's only 21 million. What? Hold on. Explain that. What? There's no CEO. Yeah. Wait, there's no, all of these things will blow your mind. And you can drop all these jewels and truth bombs, but if their mind is getting blown at each one, and then they're not paying attention to the next line, then they're lost. But if they're actually digesting what you're saying and focused and using their wits, and I think that's what Bitcoin's all about in a lot of ways, is like kind of this crazy A/B test. Just, you're looking at the world and what's working, what's not. Are you paying attention? Are you reading the signs? And your piece, it just covers so much ground so concisely. And it's extremely illiterate too. So I do want to read this piece. Bitcoin can be used by a street food vendor, whether they're in Manhattan or El Salvador. It's for the roadside fruit stand in the Caribbean, in Lebanon, and in Nigeria. It's for the refugees, dissidents, and reluctant immigrants from places like Venezuela, Syria, Argentina, or Hong Kong.
And Canada.
People who must leave behind everything else they have to find a new place to live. I think about that a lot right now. And I did get into a very interesting conversation with a few big Canadian Bitcoiners. And one had decided to leave and one had decided to stay. And then this was a few weeks back, and he was really of the opinion that, you know, for the most part, I can't be guaranteed assurances wherever I go because things can change there. Yeah. But at some point, if there was a red line, I would leave. And I wonder what he's thinking now about, you know, the current environment. Yeah. And I do think it's just a very...
And Bitcoin is for these people, right? I think, isn't it interesting? Like, I'm going to say it's not just a coincidence. And I'm going to go even deeper. It's not just a coincidence that many Bitcoiners are prepared to stand their ground if they believe that they shouldn't take the vaccine and not take the vaccine. They are under less pressure to take the vaccine because they can leave with their wealth or the lot of their wealth. They can convert their wealth to Bitcoin and they can walk out of the country and they can show up in another country and have their wealth. Now, many of them are still, you know, you're not leaving behind your Bitcoin value. You're leaving behind a land that you love. You're leaving behind a business that you built. You're leaving,
Family, friends.
Yeah. Yeah, you are leaving behind those things. Yeah, you're leaving me behind.
I think some people want to know if they should stay and fight.
Yeah, no, I do.
You know, and be a part of maybe fixing things. And where, you know, and I think Stefan Levera went through that, where like if everyone around you doesn't believe in your freedoms, what do you do? Right. You know,
and I think that case, it's time to hightail it out of there, which he did.
Sure. You know, and I think that's, and I wonder how far or how close Canada is to Australia and where everyone else is in, you know, countrywide behind that.
Yeah. It's a real tough situation in terms of deciding what to do. And it's a sad situation. Like today, I've been in the last week, I've been flying high because so many great, great things have been happening for me and my career and me and my friends and just like a lot of positive things. But today is a very somber and sad day because people I care about are going to be not accessible to me and I'm not going to be accessible to them as we have been as a consequence of what I would consider to be the type of bad decisions that we get in the kind of system that we have that needs to be fixed. And that isn't going to be fixed by voting, and it isn't going to be fixed by signing petitions, and it sadly isn't going to be fixed by writing letters. It's going to be fixed by rebuilding it to a different system.
Yep, and it's if not now, then when?
Right.
And you know, there's another part of the poem, not poem, the piece. It is a bit of a poem to me.
Yeah. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. Or I don't use. See, to like
I don't work
it,
for right. I don't work for anybody, right? I just work for Bitcoin, so I can write however I want. And I have no editor who has a standards book to tell me this, you know, you write this in a capital B and paragraphs are connected to this and you don't do double line break. It's like, I make my rules.
Yeah.
I'm sovereign, baby.
I hear you. And you're a Bitcoiner. So Bitcoin can be received by any wheat farmer anywhere in the world from any nearby miller, who will grind that wheat into flour and sell it to a local baker who will make it into bread to sell it to a neighboring family who can then be nourished to do what it is they do, which may be something the wheat farmer may buy from them using the Bitcoin he received for his wheat. Anywhere, everywhere, by anyone, over and over again, Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, whatever the profession, whatever the activity. Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, almost. You know, it just really made me feel like, I have this longing to get back to, you know, the basics and maybe an old fashioned way of life. Yeah. Something much more simple.
Right. And I wanted to draw back to that. Like, I wanted to say, like, even just to have a community where we eat bread, you know, this isn't about carbs or anything. It's just like bread is a staple food. That is eaten by people, and it requires a farmer, and it requires a miller, and it requires a baker, and it requires other people to do other things who buy the bread. And so I wanted to use. I also come back to the loaf of bread later in the article. So I wanted to set up this notion of bread, and have those two pieces connect later on. But it is, and it's becoming ever more clear, right, that this is. doable with Bitcoin now that Lightning Network exists and it's so easy to transfer wealth, and people who are using Lightning Network, and I don't know how many of your listeners are, but for those who are, you'll be familiar with this, and for those who aren't, you'll appreciate this. It's like you can start to have these relationships where you see people regularly and you see businesses regularly, and you're instantly transacting for incredibly cheap fees, like one Satoshi, right? Or 1 1/4 Satoshis is the transaction fee for a transaction that in the longest case takes 3 seconds to complete. And it's really lovely. And nobody stands in the way, and nobody takes a cut beyond that one Satoshi for operating the network. And you don't have to worry about anything being up or down. Like the thing just works so well. It works as good as all these bank-backed, Visa-banked payment networks, and it works internationally. So someone can send you a Lightning invoice from any country in the world, and you don't have to pay an exchange fee because you're using Lightning. You're using Satoshis or Bitcoins as your unit of account, which I also really encourage people to start thinking in terms of. And it all works really well. And so it's totally feasible to say a farmer can receive this, because every farmer has a mobile phone or a computer, right? And so does every miller, and so does every baker, and so does everyone who buys bread. And we don't need all this excess silly hardware. We just need what we've already carrying around. Like that to me is the beauty. This is going to be a slight tangent, but it just dropped like one of the, like the, all the infrastructure that Bitcoin needs to get hyper Bitcoinized is there. Right? Like we don't need anything else. Like it's going to run on your mobile phones, and it's going to run on your laptop computers, and it's going to run, maybe some more people need to buy some more Raspberry Pis, which are really cheap computers, but we don't need, it's not like, oh, when the internet was coming, everybody buy stock in router companies, because we are going to need to hook up millions and millions and billions of routers to build the infrastructure of the internet. Like it's built, and Bitcoin flies over the internet encrypted. Especially with Lightning Network, and nobody even knows that it's Lightning Network stuff that's moving about it and how it's moving. So it's the infrastructure is there. So as the demand rises, there's nothing holding it back. It just immediately steps into the demand.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And that's the technological side, though. But the other side of the coin is, like, in most places, it's illegal to make bread and sell it to your neighbor. Oh. You need like sort of a food license. Whatever it is. And so reading from your piece again, what Bitcoin can't be used for is what makes Bitcoin for everyone. Yes, Bitcoin can be used for everything. Right.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, like I was trying to reach there for, like, in the US Constitution, right? It says in the Bill of Rights, governed by the people, of the people, for the people. And I want to say Bitcoin is for the people. Bitcoin is for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's, so I'm really stressing it's for everyone. It's not for the privileged class, right? And that's where I now go into this tirade. If you wanted to read it, go ahead. But like tirade against central bank.
But what I'm keen on here, though, is, because what you touched on, and I agree, Bitcoin enables, it's non-censorable money. So you can buy things you want. We can do hand-to-hand transactions. Buy the bread and the cheese, even if it's illegal, you can still do it, right? And you can use Bitcoin to do it. But what Bitcoin can't be used for is what it makes Bitcoin for everyone. Yes, Bitcoin can be used for everything involved in making bread or shoes or factories or hydroelectric generators. You may then ask, can't Bitcoin also be used for something bad? Well, Bitcoin can be used for alcohol, where that is illegal, and cannabis, where that is illegal, and guns, where those are illegal, and fireworks, books, Bibles, and more, where they are illegal. But so can any money. Bitcoin has only been around since the year 2009, and people bought and sold illegal things before we even began counting those years. And obviously, yeah, people have been buying these things for hundreds of years,
thousands of years.
And, obviously people want these things. Yeah. So, it's kind of the same, touching on the same tangent, but, Bitcoin enables you to buy these things, and they are, but they're still illegal. And this goes, you know, kind of what we're talking about with borders, and it's just getting more and more pervasive and invasive, the rules, the regulations, what we can and can't do. Do you see the tide turning on those things?
Yeah. Listen, I mean, I think it's clear, and this is why we have such a crisis of meaning and such a crisis of culture and such a crisis of outlook, because our system is collapsing and everyone can see it. Nobody's like, oh, gee, the world is such a better place today than it was 15 years ago. It's going, it gets better every year. Like, nobody feels that way. Nobody at all. Even people on right now on MDMA aren't feeling that. They're just feeling they can deal with it. But everyone sees that it's in collapse. And Bitcoiners are optimistic because they can see what's going to replace it and that it's good. If you don't see Bitcoin, it's a really dreary time. It's a really depressing situation, right? Our institutions are in collapse. They're corrupted. They're falling apart. They're decaying. They're getting more and more desperate. It's not pleasant. And I don't see what's going to happen to turn it around. So I'm depleted. And I know a lot of people who feel this way, like in smart, like deeply philosophical, deeply studied people who are basically like, well, you know what? It's a shame. We're going to go into another dark age. And I guess this is what we have because people had bad ideas and the people with the bad ideas won. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a view that some people carry. And I'm thinking of one in particular, and I've tried to orange pill this guy for 8 years, and he's like, Bitcoin can't be touched. It's an idea, so it can't be money, right? So his mind is closed to it for that silly reason. And but he's depressed, and he has a very negative outlook about the world, and it's sad. And it, because he's a funny guy with a great mind and everything else. Bitcoiners, on the other hand, I think they've identified that civilization is in collapse, and they're not, you know, there are people like this other friend of mine who I described who see that it's in collapse and are just depressed. There are other people who try to lie to themselves about it, right? They're willfully ignorant. They're willfully blind. They're in denial. These are the people who are trying to defend the fiat system. Oh, there'll just be transitory inflation. Oh, there'll just be high inflation for the next 5 months, and then it'll go back down to its regular pre-scheduled level of our new higher target of 3% rather than 2%. And they're going to keep making excuses, and they're going to keep pretending that they don't see what everybody else sees, which is, no, they've created a shitload of inflation. So there's the willfully blind because they're too scared to see, because their livelihood depends. But, and all of our livelihood depends on some civilization existing, right? It's not, some people are the beneficiaries of the corruption in the system, but we all are beneficiaries of something about our modern civilization. Like you and I are talking thanks to the internet existing and electricity existing and clean water existing and clothing existing and all that kind of stuff. Like we don't want to destroy and burn down our civilization. That's what's scaring everybody. Bitcoiners are hopeful, and I think we have to get very serious about this, because we can see how to build the next civilization, one that is immune and the things that corrupted the civilization that we're witnessing collapse around us right now. So we've identified that the civilization is collapsing. We've identified what it can be to fix it, and we spend our time and attention focused on building the thing that will prevent a collapse of our civilization. And the thing is, there is no stopping the collapse of the fiat system. It is built to collapse, right? And history shows over and over and over that it collapses, because it's endless IOUs piled up on IOUs piled up on IOUs at an accelerating rate that eventually goes exponential, which we call hyperinflation, and it falls. And so that just, you know, there's no case in history of any of these things existing for 100 years, these fiat currencies. And we're coming up on like the 71 year mark, right?
Yeah.
And if you say 1971, then we're really only in 51 years into it. So maybe we've got a little bit longer to go, but it's ramping up. And I hope we actually have longer to go than shorter to go, so that we can oversee this transition. And I hope that in that transition, Bitcoin becomes the world's capital, And by capital, I mean like money, right? Not the city of location. That Bitcoin becomes the capital that the world uses, and that all of the institutions that we rely on, the power generating facilities, the water purification facilities, or the gas distribution facilities, all of those things move to the Bitcoin standard, and the money that's behind them doesn't collapse, and everything moves forward, and that things move forward according to the terms that we're going to describe in the second article that we read today, which is people dealing by mutual agreement, not somebody in some capital city, to contrast it, tells everybody what they are and are not allowed to do, right? Like, you're not allowed. Why does the law exist that you're not allowed to bake a loaf of bread and sell it to me? Why does it exist? Right? Yep. It exists over time because a very large bakery got the government to pass a law to put their competitors out of business. Like, let's call it what it is. Right. Like, and they made all these arguments. They didn't say openly, you know, we really want to monopolize this business. Why don't you put all the little bakeries out of business? They said, why don't you institute standards that really elevate the bread production process? Like that you have to have the fanciest equipment, and that you have to have these inspectors, and that you have to have this, and you have to have this, and you have to have that, and you have to have that, and you have to have a sticker, and you have to have a government agent come in and review each thing, so that it's impossible to do if you bake a dozen loaves of bread a day. You need to have a factory that bakes a million loaves of bread a day to accommodate for all the administrators that are necessary by the laws of what it takes to sell bread. And lo and behold, all the little bakeries go out of business. And you know, and you're not allowed to bake a loaf of bread because you don't meet, not because your bread isn't safe, not because your bread isn't tasty, not because your bread is poisonous, but because it doesn't meet the arbitrary requirements of the approval processes and inspection processes. Like, I bake bread in my kitchen. I stopped because I got bored of it. Mm. How many people baked sourdough bread in their kitchens when the COVID crisis began? It was really good bread. And I shared it with my mom, and I shared it with my next door neighbors, and I shared it with anyone who would come over, and it was awesome. And but I guess if I had tried to sell it, I would have been in violation of some laws. But somebody told me that everybody violates like 100 laws a day because it's impossible to not to. It's not like you consciously violate the laws. It's like, well, you know, you rip the tag off your pillow or.
Yeah.
whatever idiotic laws exist, we're breaking them all the time.
Well, apparently. So many of them are idiotic, and you only think about it in regards to, I can't buy this thing or I can't get it that thing. But I see it on the other side as like, well, you can't be that thing. And mm-hmm. So you need a license to be a barber, yeah. Or a license to be
a travel agent,
whatever it is, you know.
A nanny.
Yep. And you know, you just think about skin in the game. And if you made bad cheese, people would get a little sick. They'd write a review and you just wouldn't sell any more cheese. Or people would sue you, you know, and there'd just be repercussions that would just take care of the problem more than I think the government could. But, you know, I kind of want to, because you cover so much ground in this, before we turn to the other piece, I do want to read a little bit more from your piece around bailouts. So Chancellor on the brink of second bailouts for banks. What is the significance of this? What is a bailout? In the case of banks, a bailout is when, despite the fact that a bank that has failed, that has gone bankrupt, that has lost money, that this has happened because it has made negligent and irresponsible decisions. Despite all this, the bank receives a grant of free money to prevent its facing the consequences of its mistakes. And its executives, officers, and shareholders do not pay a price for their mistakes. That's a bailout. Now, if this were to happen once and only once, a bank might learn its lesson. You're getting a second chance. Don't be careless or negligent ever again. But when this happens a second time, there is a very different lesson. That lesson is be as careless as you'd like, because you won't ever have to pay for your mistakes, but you can get to keep the rewards of your risky bets if they do pay off. Who does pay for these mistakes? It isn't nobody. It's everyone else. Everyone. The farmer, the foreign worker, the factory worker, and the teacher. It's even the six-year-old who will enter the workforce only 20 years later with a debt burden to pay off, because the banks got bailed out when she was only a child. When people who take careless risks don't have to pay for them, they stop taking care to not take careless risks. In fact, they were rewarded for taking careless risks. This, sadly, is the world we are living in today, a world where banks lend recklessly, governments spend irresponsibly, and debt mounts exponentially. A world
where those who rack up the debt, not in the millions of dollars, not in the billions of dollars, but in the trillions of dollars, do not pay it back. They have no intention of paying it back. They make others pay it back, either directly or through inflation. And so my contention is not they're not learning from their mistakes, or they're kind of that they're kind of essentially incentivized to take as many risks as possible. And to take a hedge fund punt. If I make a good bet,
that's the name of the game.
I'm going
that's
home.
The name of the game. Huge. And the only thing, the only reason you wouldn't do it is if you were moral. But if you were, then you fail.
There's no reason to be moral in the system.
No, there's only reason to be. You cannot survive if you behave morally, right? Like a bank that didn't take these sorts of risks when all their competitors were and ended up not going bankrupt. I mean, there were a couple of banks actually that did take this approach during 2008. They're few and far between, and it makes no economic sense. And again, this is part of the culture that we've built up here and the failing of our culture. Right. We have built a culture that where the shareholders of the bank want results next quarter. And so the CEO delivers results next quarter, and he's got to take the big risks, and he cascades those decisions down, and everybody takes the big risks, and then a rogue trader bankrupts the bank, and the government, and you and I, through a government bailout, give him reprieve from the consequences of everything, and give those shareholders reprieve. And so the shareholders don't learn their lesson. Right, the bank shareholders are like more. And there's been so many scandals, you can't even keep up with it as to how many times banks are taking advantage of their clientele. I've just been so disgusted so many times, I don't even want to begin to go into it. But that's what's broken about that system. And it's interesting to me, Satoshi has in the Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. And so I'm grateful for that, because it allowed me to make the point that it's like the second bailout's really the worst one. The first one is like, okay, you know what? We had a crisis. Maybe we were all got ahead of ourselves. Let's fix it. Let's paper this over and make sure it never happens again. But once it happens again, you've crossed the Rubicon, and now you're into, oh, it's going to happen again and again and again and again. And that's really, and it's going to happen industry after industry after industry, because everybody else looks and they say, oh, they got a bailout. I can't operate anymore. I fucked up. Can I get a bailout too? And there's just this endless expectation. And the politicians want to get reelected, so they don't want all the people working for this company to lose their jobs. So they, you know, like they bailed out GM and Ford, or they bailed out GM and Chrysler when Ford was still a functioning company, and Ford didn't get anything. It's like, well, you know, like, what's the point in building a good car or doing a good job in your industry to do a better job than your competitors if your competitors go bankrupt and get a bigger gift for going bankrupt than you did for building good cars and surviving? And so this is just... this bailout thing is rampant, but I was great. I wonder if Satoshi had Bitcoin ready when the first bailout went, and he said, you know what, I'm going to let it ride. I'm going to let it sit and polish the code until there's a second bailout, because he saw this. I mean, there's just so many things that are so perfect that I just say that it was that made it happen. But what an incredible message to be embedded, carved in stone. Like, you know, you can carve something in stone. Carving it into the block one of the blockchain is way more indelible than any, like, I can blow up a stone. Nobody can destroy the message in the first block of the Bitcoin blockchain. There are tens of thousands of copies of it all over the world. And if you want to go back, you can't even roll back that block, right? Like, you'd have to change the code fundamentally. But the amount of energy that it would take now to roll back that block is so monumental. And so it's there for that message is there forever, and it is a lesson, right, that we all should take, that the system is corrupt and you need to build an incorruptible system. And so the message of the corrupt system is forever seared into the first block of the Bitcoin blockchain forever. It's beautiful, right? Even though it's an ugly message, it's such a powerful.
It's so important. Yeah, I mean, I think all of this is, whether it's by design or just people just using the incentives and manipulating the system to their benefit. But I think that the bailouts are by design. I think that, you know, to decrease taxes by the rich and then tax the middle class to make up for it, all by design. It's just kind of like the powerful running over the less powerful and the defenseless. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we do have another defensive tool at our disposal. But just to finalize the piece before we turn to the other piece, that is why Bitcoin is for everyone. So while Bitcoin can be used for almost anything, it is what Bitcoin can't be used for that makes it special. It can't be used to force some people to pay for the mistakes of others. It can't be used to create a privileged class of financiers, bankers, and politicians who need not earn their money and who do not face the same consequences as others if they lose it. Bitcoin isn't just for the privileged. Bitcoin is for everyone. Yeah. And because Bitcoin is for everyone, and we're all out there trying to figure this out, you know, I think about moral code and how do you operate in a world where, okay, now we're all in the same system and we kind of want to think about incentives a little differently. We want something better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think through like, well, how do I figure out what my moral code is or what my base sort of values are? So I would love to turn to your piece, the Bitcoin rule, do unto yeah. others and be done unto them only by mutual agreement.
Sure. Yeah. And
I really hope you guys are enjoying this conversation with Tomer as much as I am. Before we get back into it, I want to share with you some information about Bitcoin 2022. Bitcoin 2021 drew a record attendance of over 10,000 people to Miami. For 2022, the conference has been expanded and will include a fourth day for a Sound Money Music Festival. The Miami Beach Convention Center will provide five times the space as the Wynwood Conference, and organizers are expecting more than 30,000 attendees. Bitcoin 2022 conference, which celebrates Bitcoin over 4 days, April 6th through 9th, next year, with four different passes. Prices are going to go up. So make sure to use our code BitcoinMatrix to get 10% off your tickets and buy them as soon as possible. I definitely want to see you there. Last year was so fresh and dope. It was so much fun, and I can't wait to get back. So definitely remember to use the code BitcoinMatrix when you're checking out for Bitcoin 2022. And now, let's re-enter the Bitcoin Matrix with Tomer. Right before we get into his piece, The Bitcoin Rule, we're going to talk more about moral codes, incentives, and mutual agreement.
Maybe just say a couple of words about before we start. When it comes to moral codes, you can study ethics, which is a branch of philosophy, which to really study it, there's a lot of different ethical codes out there and moral codes, and you have to study other branches of philosophy to understand how they connect to epistemology and metaphysics and politics and aesthetics. And it's a big thing to study a lot of philosophy to know what the moral code is, and even then you'll be confused. But we have these really convenient moral codes in a single sentence, and I wanted to write about that in this article, and so that's what this is. So if you want, I'll dive into the Bitcoin rule: do unto others and be done unto them. And be done. you and I both struggled on it. I should rewrite the headline. The Bitcoin rule: do unto others and be done unto by them, only by mutual agreement. So it begins, a whole moral code in a single sentence: the golden rule. It is amazing that something so complicated as a moral code could be summed up in a single sentence. A moral code is, after all, a set of principles that are meant to govern all your actions. These include actions you take both unto yourself and unto others. Most people do not even realize that one needs a moral code when acting alone, but one does. And this is because one owes oneself the duty to behave in principled actions so that one does not harm or even end their own life. You shouldn't eat junk food, for example, not because of how it affects other people, because it doesn't, but because of how it affects you. However, it is with respect to our relationship with others that this piece is focused on. And it is remarkable that a single sentence known as the Golden Rule has served as a reasonable summary of a decent moral code for a very long time, much as gold served as a reasonable money for a very long time. The Golden Rule, as nearly everybody knows, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is in its positive form, and it also exists in its equally useful negative form. Don't do unto others as you would not have them do unto you. It is a very wise rule. In many situations, it is a reasonable rule to live by. However, it has a flaw. That flaw is that you are unique, and so is everyone else. What you might want done unto you may not be what someone else wants done unto them. Or for your own sake, it may be that what someone else wants done unto them is something you absolutely don't want done unto you. Note how the golden rule is actually failing us today. And the greatest example of this is those who want the COVID vaccine, that is, those who want the injection of the vaccine done unto them, are actually following the golden rule perfectly when they insist that others take the vaccine as well. They are trying to do unto others as they have had done unto themselves. There is no breach of this moral code in insisting that someone else be vaccinated if you want to be vaccinated yourself. The same goes for being taxed, being given government education, government health care, and anything else where people insist others be done unto as they want done unto themselves. Next, the platinum rule. So this shortcoming of the golden rule is not a new discovery. There has been a reformulation of it for many years that is called the platinum rule. It states, do unto others as they would want done unto them. It is a more thoughtful formulation of the golden rule. It requires its practitioners to try to understand what the desires of someone else are, and then that they seek to fulfill those desires rather than simply projecting their own unique desires unto everyone else. As but one example of it, I want someone to prepare for me a delicious feast of my favorite food. But that particular food could, in fact, due to an allergy, be lethally dangerous to someone I would like to prepare a delightful meal for. I can't serve them the meal I want served unto me. That's an example of this rule's superiority to the golden rule. Now, these moral codes in a sentence are so simple to state and analyze that they do not require much philosophical analysis to judge them, but they do require a little. Why isn't the platinum code a perfect substitute for the golden rule? Well, it too has a weakness. It does not answer why or when or under what circumstances you should be doing unto others as they want done unto them. And if you follow this rule unquestioningly, you will become exhausted, hungry, tired, and taken advantage of by others who themselves are not following this rule. This rule grants asymmetric benefits in favor of those who don't follow it at the expense of those who do. For example, if I'm following this rule by doing unto another person whatever they tell me they want done unto them, but who do not follow it themselves, a person doing nothing for me in return, I am actually their slave. Next, the unnamed rule. There is also an openly evil reformulation of these rules. It does not have a name because evildoers rarely like to openly identify as evil. But this rule does exist, and it is wickedly stated thus as the perversion it is of moral codes intending to do good. It states, do unto others before they do unto you. The first time I heard someone state this, I was completely shocked. It was in my first year of business school, and a young student turned to me and said something like, I know what business is all about. Screw the other guy before he screws you. This is, by the way, not what business is all about at all, but the fact that there are people who believe it in business, in politics, and in other disciplines simply cannot be denied. This unnamed rule is the moral code of scammers, of fraudsters, of thieves, of attackers, and of killers. People who live by this rule view other people as both threats and as victims. They view the relationships between people as filled with mistrust. Worst of all, the more people there are that practice this moral code, the more it makes sense to practice it yourself. For example, if you are surrounded by people who are out to screw you, you may not see a way through other than screwing them. What's the missing moral ingredient in all of these? Reciprocity. All these moral codes have a missing ingredient. That ingredient, in a word, is reciprocity. And reciprocity is defined as the practice of exchanging things with others for mutual benefit. It is perhaps not a coincidence that neither the golden nor the platinum rule fail to mention reciprocity. This might be because both golden can be seized from a practitioner of those rules by a practitioner of the unnamed rule. If you are in possession of gold or platinum, a practitioner of the unnamed rule can take it from you by force. even if it means killing you first. Both those rules implicitly acknowledge that there is a desire to be treated well by others, but they command only the practitioner to treat others well. And both are silent about the fact that it is possible for others to ignore these rules. Enter the Bitcoin rule. Formulated in this tradition of doing unto others, the Bitcoin rule states this: do unto others and be done unto by them only by mutual agreement. The Bitcoin rule leaves no room for force, for fraud, or for unstated expectations of reciprocity where one hopes that another person will repay kindness with further kindness instead of with cruelty. Why call this the Bitcoin rule? Because Bitcoin is the only instrument that makes such a moral code enforceable. Bitcoiners reading this will know that someone wanting to do harm unto them to try to get their Bitcoin is largely wasting their time. Killing a Bitcoiner will not release their Bitcoin to the murderer. Neither will ordering them to surrender their Bitcoin. They are self-sovereign. Only agreeing with a Bitcoiner for an exchange which both parties find acceptable will do. Before Bitcoin was invented, and before capitalism became so corrupted in practice, this rule could have been called the capitalist rule, but we are too far gone for that now. Capitalism's meaning is so obscured and distorted that the word is lost to us. Furthermore, in the face of the existence of Bitcoin, which flawlessly defends one's ability to practice this rule, it is now more appropriate to call this rule the Bitcoin rule, even if we had pure voluntary capitalism. This rule is a perfectly sound and stable rule to live by. Living by this rule does not expose you to being exploited by those who live by the unnamed rule. You must, of course, be careful, as there are many people who practice that rule in some aspect of their lives, and they are after your Bitcoin. But they cannot take your Bitcoin from you by doing unto you anything that doesn't get you to voluntarily relinquish Bitcoin to them. If I had to elaborate any further on the Bitcoin rule, it would fail the test of being a useful moral code in a sentence. So I just leave you with it again, a final time. Feel free to sharpen it as best suits you. I'll see you out there in the real world where we will interact by that rule with love and kindness towards one another, or not at all. Do unto others and be done unto by them only by mutual agreement.
Thank you, Tomer. I love this piece. It's so straightforward. But I wasn't familiar with some of these rules. Or at least,
really?
Yeah, I mean, I know the golden rule.
Okay.
I never heard the platinum rule before.
Okay.
Never heard the
unnamed. Doesn't have as much marketing. Well, because it's not named. But had you never heard?
I just feel like that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's really incentivized by the golden or platinum rule as much anymore. Mm-hmm. I think of just a lot. There are certain leaders and most leaders and how they sort of act upon us and the incentives of the system. I get what you're saying about how it makes you have to feel like you have to operate on that level or that rule to protect yourself or to get anywhere in this world or not be a slave or not taken advantage of. So where did you draw inspiration from this? And you'd heard, I guess, obviously, of the platinum rule before this. And do you think most people live by a moral code today?
Well, everybody lives for it's unstated and they don't personally know what it is. They don't just in every, like, even if you live in the situation of you evaluate every situation as it comes up and you decide on the spot what to do, that's your moral code. Like, I'm gonna wing it. That's your moral code, right? I'm gonna be expedient. That particular moral code in philosophical circles is called pragmatism, by the way. Right? It's like, well, you know, in this case, it looks like if I did this to this person, I'd be better than if I did that to this person. So I'm gonna do this to this person. It's unprincipled, right? It's not acting on principle, but it's the principle of acting not on principle because you do it consistently. So everybody's got a moral code. It may be very fuzzy in people's heads. And they're all some variant of, I'd say, the golden rule, which is a selfless rule. The unnamed rule, which is a selfish rule. Rule, which is a mutual agreement, a voluntary rule. And that I think really encapsulates how human interaction ought to be and And you can demand that the interactions be that way with you if you're free from the use of force, the initiation of force by somebody else. So the Bitcoin rule is in some respects similar to the non-aggression principle, but it states it in a very different way, right? The non-aggression principle just says don't initiate aggression. But what does that mean in terms of commerce, right? Well, when presented against the golden rule, you know, the golden rule, how does that fit into the non-aggression principle, right? It just says, do unto others as you would have done unto you. So it's like, you know, I'd like a back rub, so I guess I should go and give everybody a back rub. It's kind of weird, but it's like I'm a touchy-feely person. You know, I'd be in jail if I did unto others as I would have them do unto me. Yes. So it's it doesn't sync well with the non-aggression principle. The two things don't fit well. And so I do think if you say, look, we're going to have an encounter and we're going to have a mutual agreement. I'd like a back rub. You'd like an omelet. That's the trade. Right. And that's the deal. And, you know, or I'd like a back rub and you'd like 2000 Satoshis for it or 20,000 Satoshis for it. Now we've got a deal and there's reciprocity built into it. And that's, I think, what capitalism was meant to be. And I do say in the article, that word is lost to us. Like too many people see it as the corrupted world we live in right now. It's impossible to practice pure capitalism because everything's regulated up to the eyeballs. You can't bake a loaf of bread and sell it to somebody. So we don't have what that idea was. And so we don't actually have a rule for free voluntary exchange. We don't have a word for free voluntary exchange and mutually agreed upon exchange. But that's what I'm calling the Bitcoin code here. And that kind of really distills it. And I think it's important that we could probably have a really long, deeply philosophical discussion about this and we could bring in philosophy. But I think what's sweet about this is we don't have to have that conversation for people to understand what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. We're just saying, make a deal with people. Don't initiate force on them. Don't harm them. And don't let them harm you. And don't expect that they'll harm you. And Bitcoin can protect you from being harmed. And it is amazing to me. And again, when I say everyone has a moral code, it's often not explicitly stated. I am trying to explicitly state not just what Bitcoin allows, but what my experience with Bitcoiners has been. My experience with Bitcoiners is overwhelmingly we treat each other with mutual respect and we don't do unto others before they do unto us, which I would say is, that's another Bitcoin only idea. If you're looking at the crypto space, the whole theme of it is do unto others before they do unto you, you know, get them to hold the bag before the price drops to zero, before the contract gets exploited, before the rug gets pulled. There's no one to pull a rug in Bitcoin. There's nobody who is, you know, like I think some of the Bitcoin skeptics were like, look, the Bitcoin bag holder, the Bitcoin big holders are selling at these prices to all the newcomers and they're going to rip them off. It's like, well, gee, those newcomers did really, really well. And nobody's underwater in having bought Bitcoin. So it's like nobody's taking advantage of anybody else here. Everyone's dealing by a mutual agreement. Somebody wants to sell a Bitcoin. Somebody wants to buy a Bitcoin. It's mutually agreed upon. They want to buy it on one exchange. They want to sell it on another exchange. Like everybody's free to do what they want to do through mutual agreement. And that's a really important aspect of freedom, right? Like freedom isn't, I can bash you in the head. I'm free to bash you in the head. Freedom means I respect your freedom and you respect mine. And if we agree to do something together, we do it. And nobody else stops us from it. And if we don't agree, we don't agree. And we go our own separate ways. And that's what it means to be peaceful, free human beings. And you can have a tremendous amount of brotherly love for somebody, even if you don't agree with them, right? It's like, Tomer, come on my podcast. It's like, no. Okay. It's nothing personal, right? We'll see each other on Twitter. But if I do come on your podcast, then it's good. It's because it's good for us both, right? You're not holding a gun to my head. And it's not the other way around either.
Yeah. No, I won't show anyone the gun that I have right now. To your head. just kidding. But you know, it's a great piece, and I think it goes well with the other piece that we've already discussed. I do want to turn back to Bitcoin is for everyone, specifically the last section. You know, finally, Bitcoin is for any time. Mm. Yeah, and I'm kind of curious what this section of the article means to
this,
you.
This to me is the most important part of Bitcoin. Bitcoiners talk about having low time preference, which means having a long-term time horizon that we focus on. And our world today has lost something of tremendous value, which is the focus on things that take multiple, are such big projects that they actually take multiple generations to do, that you starting this project know at the time that you're starting it, you will not live to see it completed. Wow. Not because it's dangerous, but because it's going to take 100 years, 300 years, 1,000 years. You're building a dynasty, you're building an empire, you're building a cathedral. Nick Carter has a really wonderful article called Bitcoin at 12, which he wrote. He said, you know, we're laying bricks in a cathedral that we won't live to see the final construct of it, but just the spirit of building it is reward enough in and of itself. And Bitcoin is that, and the fiat system is the antithesis of that. It's all about give me results next quarter or get me elected in the next election. And who cares what happens afterward? And it's destroying the earth, and it's destroying the environment, and it's destroying life on this planet, and it's destroying the culture of humanity. And it's just like everything is garbage because it's only built, nothing's built to last. And Bitcoin's the opposite of it. I think we talked about it earlier on this podcast, right? Like it's built to last forever. And when your money is built to last forever, you can plan projects that will take forever and just keep on going. For a really long time. And I think our culture is going to be restored, renewed, and made sustainable by the existence of this money that lasts forever, that isn't going to collapse on us as fiat is absolutely going to do. So this is very, very important. And I also tug at like the heartstrings of the unborn of tomorrow's children. Right, like our species can be redeemed if we can go on forever. Mm. And there's wonderful thing as we started, right? And every human being is wonderful and special. And every human being to be born is going to be wonderful and special. And so let's leave them a world in which they can exhibit their towering strength, their wonderfulness and their specialness, and not be brought into a world that has unnecessary collapse in it and has exhausted resources and polluted the oceans and filled garbage dumps and cities with trash. Like, let's build something, let's build sustainable things that last for a long time. Let's make healthy food, let's be healthy, let's have a sound mind, sound body. Let's be healthy human beings on a healthy planet with a healthy ecosystem. And I 100% believe that Bitcoin is going to drive us in that direction towards sustainability and fairness and all these other things that I mentioned in that part. But that's the most important part for me. And I've got children, and I want them to have children so that I have grandchildren someday. I want them to be living in a good world, right? I don't want to watch my grandchildren suffer. I want to watch them thrive and love life and experience life as wonderful and magical, as a wonderful and magical miracle, even through the time that they get through school and even through the time that they graduate through whatever we have as school and enter the world of being productive and trading their time for other people's time, right? And that is having a good world like that where they can continue to be unique and not be treated by a decree is worth fighting for, and it's worth living for, and it's supported by Bitcoin and not by fiat money.
Yeah. I think probably maybe the struggle for some very maybe ambitious and overachieving families, parents, whatever, young men and women is, especially if they don't know about Bitcoin, is do they, you know, do the unnamed rule to acquire enough wealth and value that they sort of live in the fiat overlay and they won't be subjected to, you know, the rules of the minions. And you know, and I think those incentives are really strong. Like I look at, and I'm not saying this is what drove this person, but there was a young basketball player recently. I think it was Andrew Wiggins. You know, he just took the vax to play NBA ball for another year. And, you know, at the sort of a very eloquent sort of, you know, explanation for why he made his decision. But at the root of it, you know, I really saw a bit of an economic decision of like, well, you know, some people could say, well, you know, doesn't he have enough money now, or couldn't he just skip the year? And I think it's possible if you skip the year, you might not ever be allowed back in. But and so then you really put to like, well, this gentleman has like a certain window to make an incredible amount of money that, and I don't know what his background is, but I can imagine some people who didn't come from much, if they can make $6, $8, $12, $14, $16, $18, $22 million this year, next year, for whatever cost at that point, like not even at owning your body, but like lifting you and your family out of maybe poverty for generations. And yeah, like, you know, it's kind of like going to war, or maybe what it was like. My great uncle played, you know, he was a lineman and he didn't live very long. He was an NFL, you know, Pro Bowl player, but he didn't live very long. And, you know, maybe that was the sacrifice for glory in some regards. And you're allowed to make that decision. But I really think it's an economic one. You know, he's got a certain amount of time to make this money now. And I think it's just really hard, the decisions people are having to make right now.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think, you know, it's very hard to judge a person who made a decision at the point of a gun, right? Like, you know, they basically said, like, you will take this vaccine or you will not earn money this year.
But it's a huge amount of money and not an amount of money that you might be able to make up in the future. But, like if you're a coder and you could release your software later or whatever it is, you know, you can't do this in a decentralized fashion.
But I would just point out, it's a bigger when you threaten someone who is only making $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000.
Oh, bigger threat. I get that.
It's a way bigger threat, right?
I get it. I mean, from the greater economic sense, I get what you're saying. I think both are pressed with perilous or very difficult decisions.
Yeah. And I think this is it. I think it's very hard to I don't think you can morally.
I'm not judging anyone. I'm just sad.
I'm
that...
not saying you are either. I think these are kind of the harsh times where, you know, a moral code is out the window when a gun is pointed to your head. Ayn Rand said, "Morality ends where a gun begins." Mm-hmm. Right, and it is, you know, like if someone points a gun at you and says, "Hit that guy with a stick," or pick up a gun and shoot somebody else. Which is the moral action here? And I think what she pointed out rightly is morality is what you choose to do when you're not being forced to do something, right? Like that's the key point. So when somebody's forcing you to do something, it's already outside of the scope of a moral code. It's now in this arbitrary realm where you are a victim and you're being asked to make others a victim, but it's gone, right? And if you can take the gun and shoot the person pointing, that would be the moral thing to do if you could do it. But obviously these scenarios are painted where you can't. But when people are being forced to do something, we're outside the scope of morality. We're outside the scope of ethics. We're now outside the scope of choice. And morality is all about what you choose to do.
Yeah.
But if you're forced to do something, you are not choosing to do it. So it's not in the realm of morality.
I hear you. Tomer, this has been wonderful, amazing as always.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, I would love for you to share where people can find you and your work. And then I would love for you to read out, you know, the final piece that we're referencing now. And, you know, even before that, the floor is yours if there's anything you want to say about it before we roll out to it.
Oh, sure. You can find me at Tomer Sterlight on Twitter, and tomersterlight.medium.com is where I publish many of my articles. I have, I don't know how long it's going to take you to get this podcast out. I've got my first video coming out soon. It's called Bitcoin is Generational Wealth. And I'll talk more about it. It's It's about what we were just talking about as well, how Bitcoin is for generational wealth, multi-generational projects and things. And it's going to be a very emotional piece that covers a period of time of like 160 years of history and the future in it. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that. I'll probably have a couple of companies that help get the distribution out for it. And so I just don't want to pre-announce anything until it's final. Yeah. It may turn out to be different. But so tomerstrolight.medium.com is where all my articles are. And that's all you need to know, really. You don't need to, don't look for me on LinkedIn. Don't bother me on Facebook. All right, let's...
I am going to read that piece you released today. I think I'm going to read it tonight before I fall asleep Facebook.
The one about Facebook.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll take 2 seconds on that. Maybe I'll take 2 minutes on it, actually. You know, maybe many people don't log into Facebook anymore, but when you log into Facebook, it says, "What's on your mind, Tomer?" It's trying to get you to post. So I wrote back to Facebook and told it what was on my mind. And there's a few things on my mind, obviously, and the corruption of our civilization is one of them. And so the article is called, "I'll Tell You What's on My Mind, Facebook." And I ended up posting it onto Medium because even though I made it public on Facebook, it turned out people had to log into to Facebook. But it's about the corruption in our civilization and how things are falling apart. And it's about purpose in life, and it's about the love of your family, and it's about problems in various industries, but it focuses in specifically on the healthcare system, where my family has been struggling because one member of my family has a variety of health conditions, which I think I may have mentioned either on this podcast or earlier to you. And it's been very hard to get high quality healthcare, in part because of the nature of the fiat world. So yeah, have a good read of that. I've gotten lots of really positive feedback on that piece. It was more a piece from the heart. It's not explicitly about Bitcoin, but it's very implicitly about Bitcoin. When you read it and you know who I am, you'll know that it's about my family, it's about healthcare, and it's about Bitcoin. All right. So that's what that's about. And let me just let me read this final portion of Bitcoin is for Everyone one more time. Finally, Bitcoin is for any time. Bitcoin lasts forever. Bitcoin doesn't tarnish. It doesn't rust. It doesn't dissolve. It doesn't decay. It doesn't dilute, evaporate, or inflate. It doesn't depend on the existence of any government. It doesn't need to be redeemed for anything else to prove its worth. Its value is that it is for everyone and that it always will be. Bitcoin is forever. You can save your Bitcoin for tomorrow, next week, next year, or until the end of your life, and you can pass it on to whoever you want to when your time comes. We said that Bitcoin is for everyone, and we really mean it. Bitcoin isn't just for you and for everyone else alive on Earth right now. Bitcoin is also for everyone who has not yet been born. Bitcoin is for everyone to come. Whatever the politics of the Earth are generations from today, Bitcoin will still be there for whoever wants it. Nations will come and nations will go. Bitcoin does not rely on the continuation of any nation. But math and physics do not change. They stay the same forever. And these math and physics are all Bitcoin needs to be around forever. Let us recap then. Bitcoin is for everyone because Bitcoin is for anyone. Bitcoin is for everyone because Bitcoin can't be used to advantage some at the expense of others. Bitcoin is forever E1 because Bitcoin is forever. Bitcoin is for everyone.
That's what's up. Peace.
Peace.
This episode with Tomer Strohlite on how Bitcoin is for everyone and the Bitcoin rule was brought to you by Ledin, Bitcoin Magazine, and the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Ledin.io is a secure, simple, and easy-to-use platform for managing and growing your digital wealth. If you want to see what it's all about and get $50 free in USDC when you take out your first Ledin loan, head over to start.ledin.io/Bitcoin Matrix.
last year, over 10,000 Bitcoiners came to celebrate Bitcoin at Bitcoin 2021. And for Bitcoin 2022, they're expecting tens of thousands of rabid, crazy Bitcoiners. It's going to be off the hook, and I hope to see you there. For 10% off, use our code BitcoinMatrix and check the show notes for the link and more details. Make sure to follow the show on Twitter at DeLaBTCMatrix, and you can follow me on Twitter at SedYungleman. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, please make sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Stack stats, stay humble, and stay laser focused. This is Cedric. Peace.